Okay, and let's give a rousing Tulare County welcome for our warm-up speaker, Tommy.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Tommy, and I am an alcoholic. And I know why I'm here tonight at this AA meeting, and I'm pretty sure everybody else is in the same situation as me. I lost control of my drinking, and my life had become unmanageable. And I think that, for me at least, was the bottom line. I started off, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on my drunkalogue because two reasons. One, it's boring, and number two, I only have 10 minutes. And I want to concentrate on the two most important parts of my sobriety, and that's what happened and what life is like now. I can tell you this much, when I first started drinking, I was a positive, happy-go-lucky, happy guy. And then, over years of drinking, I transformed into an angry, lonely, mean, negative individual. And none of you, I don't think, knew me before when I became that monster. But there's my wife over there in the corner, and she will verify. She told me tonight, she said she had said to my daughters in the midst of my disease, that's not the man to marry. Okay, what happened? It was about 9.5 years ago. I woke up about 2 o'clock in the morning with a pain in my back, and it got, I had similar ones over the years, but just took care of them myself. But this time it didn't go away. So I went into the emergency room, and they diagnosed me with pancreatitis. The doctors told me that it was 95% caused by alcohol, and if I stopped drinking, the problem should go away. The chances are very good. I went home after a couple of days in the hospital and resumed my normal routine. A couple of days after that, Father's Day, June 17, 2007, the pain came back again after a night of having a couple of drinks. Back into the emergency room. Doctors told me the same thing again. Now, at this stage, I'm 60 years old. I'm not the 30-year-old macho man. 60, and I'm not ready to die. I'm walking around the emergency room, and I'm thinking to myself, let me do something I haven't done in years. Let me talk to God. So I asked God, I says, do me a favor. I said, if you take the pain away from me, I will call somebody the next morning, dear friend of mine who was in the program, and I'll talk to him. That was the only deal I was making with him. Not to quit drinking, just to talk to him. The pain went away. 15 minutes, an hour later, I don't know. I went home. The next morning, I called him up. And he came over. We sat and talked. And that was June 18th, and it was the first day of my sobriety. And I pray to God, it's the only day of sobriety that I ever had. What did I do? Well, because I was so desperate at that point, when I started going to meetings, you guys, everything that you guys suggested, I took as direction, as orders, like I was in jail. You're going to do this or you're not going to survive. I had to. That was for me. You told me to do a whole bunch of meetings in a whole bunch of days. And I did that. And I enjoyed it. Why? Because I found the meetings that I felt the most comfortable at. I found the people that I felt comfortable with again. Everything just seemed to work out with that. And I've been doing those same meetings ever since. Add one here, drop another one there. But normally it's all the same. He told me to get a sponsor. A quick little story on that one is that I go to the Lifestyles pretty regularly, even when I was drinking. There was this old guy, and he would be walking around the track, and he would be pulling an oxygen tank with him. And I'd feel sorry for him, so every once in a while I'd walk with him. This is before I got sober. And he couldn't hear, and this and that, and everything else. Well, the first meeting I go to, when I walk downstairs at the men's stag meeting, who the hell is sitting there? This man. So the next day at the gym, I go up to him and I ask him, would you be my sponsor? He was my sponsor for 3 years until he passed away. I've had a sponsor every single, just about day since I got sober. I find walking me through the 12 steps. We've had for a couple of years our little book study. We go into, like for instance, we're reading now a new pair of glasses. You know, things like that. It's that person that I can talk to about very, very personal things that I know will be kept secret, and I know that that person can help me out in my life and can help me out to be a better person. Being of service, that's something that was pounded into me by several of the people that are still in this meeting here. So I got involved right away with the little stuff, as you know, the coffee and everything else, moving up to secretaries or treasurers. I've been going to Pine Recovery for 9 years now, normally on the first Saturday of every single month. And I'm telling you, the majority of the guys in that place are your age. So, you know, I'm like the father or the grandfather. But that's fine. I'm going there. If I can help somebody, fine. But I'm going there to stay sober myself. And that's why I go there, to stay sober. If I help somebody, it's added. So that's what I do now. And, of course, my dear friend Big Rick, from the beginning, he would always say, you gotta stay in the middle of the pack. You gotta stay in touch with the fellowship. Constantly, every single day, whether it's at a meeting, whether it's on the phone, over at the gym, where I have contact with another alcoholic. And my wife is a teetotaler. So that's not the alcoholic in my family that I keep in touch with. But every day doesn't go by and I'm not with another alcoholic. What life is like now? Now, I had to write this down, little bullets, because I don't want to forget one thing. The first thing is, every single morning when I wake up without a hangover. Without the shakes. I drank 42 years. There was a lot of mornings that in the beginning, the hangover, I could handle, as I'm sure all of us could. But boy, I don't know, in the last 20, 30, whatever the hell it was, every morning it was an effort to get up, to go to work, to push myself. They're gone. Never to return unless I don't have the dry heaves or the throwing up in the morning. Isn't that a horrible, horrible way to start a morning, a day? But it became natural for me. It came natural. The shakes. Shakes are gone, except for a little bit tonight, a little bit of nervousness, but they're normally gone. Oh, I don't spend a lot of money on Visine or breath mints anymore. I mean, it does add up over the years. And then, you know, I'm including a lot of little things, and they're awesome. Obviously, very, very important things. The relationship that I've gotten back with my family. I told you what my wife had told my daughters. She used to say to me also, she says, you know, I'll always love you, but there's times I don't like you. Well, it took her maybe about 2 years to find of sobriety for me to say, you know what, I love and like you again. We sit down and talk. Communicate. I don't start fights with her anymore. Life is just so much better this way. Plain and simple. My daughters. I have two daughters. One is, she'll have a half a glass of beer, put it down, and walk away. It drives me freaking crazy. Even though I'm sober, it drives me crazy. My other one's got 5.5 years of sobriety. A lot of you guys know her, and know how bad she was, and know how good she is now. I know I was supposed to get sober for myself. I know that. But now there's another person in my life that I have to stay sober for. I had a nightmare about a week or so ago. I was out in the parking lot, it was pouring rain, and I was stone drunk. And I was crying because I was going to lie to my daughter that I didn't drink. Thank God I woke up and was sober. As I said before about the fellowship in AA, it is so, so beautiful. I went from having no friends, being lonely, to having all the friends in the world that I would ever, ever want. And you know, the age or the gender doesn't mean a difference. I like some of the meetings because some of the younger guys are starting to come to those meetings. I heard a couple of years ago from one younger guy who some of us know. He said in the meeting with Sherry, he says, you know, you can start your day over any time you want to. What a unique freaking idea. Why not? Outside services, getting involved. Yes, there's the AA being of service, and there's also outside areas where you can be of service. And please, don't take this as bragging, but about 6 years ago, I joined the Hospital Guild. There's about 115 of us women, and there's about 6 or 7 guys. And two of the guys are in the program of the 6 or 7. But you know, when we volunteer over at the hospital, guess what we're not thinking about? Ourselves. We're thinking about helping other people. So if we spend 3 or 4 hours over there at the hospital, we're not thinking up here about this guy. We're thinking about the person we're wheeling out, or the patient who's coming in, or something like that. And the bragging part is, I was not elevated to president of the hospital guild last May, and they've asked me to run again. They really couldn't. The average age is 75 and up, and I'm one of the younger ones. That's why they picked me. And I guess the most important thing about sobriety, I was sick physically, emotionally, but I didn't realize how sick I was spiritually. I was born and raised Catholic, and I was a good Catholic boy, I truly was. But my God went from God to a bottle, and now it's back to Him. And, you know, I kept hearing at meetings, you guys are telling me the old timers, rely on God, turn it over to God. And What, for whatever reason, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. So somebody suggested to me one time, he said, why don't you just branch out in some of your reading and go back to your Catholicism and read St. Ignatius Loyola or something like that. Maybe that'll help bring you back. And I thought, why not? I'll try anything to get God back into my life. And it helped me. It helped me. I'm not there where I want to be, but I'm telling you, I talked to him a heck of a lot more. And it was just, and because I'm getting older, I can't remember long sentences. So four words is about the extent of it for me right now. And I read one just back in the beginning of January, and it was very, very brief. It says, God, I trust you. Well, doesn't that really say it all in four simple words? At least it does for me. Listen, I hope, I really hope I helped somebody here tonight. If I didn't, you sure as hell helped me. Thank you very, very much.
Okay, let's give a rousing welcome to our featured speaker, Jim.
I always have to do this. I'm critically challenged. Hello, everyone. My name is Jim. I'm an alcoholic. I would first of all like to thank Rick for inviting me to speak tonight and for the wonderful hospitality that he has shown Tommy and me tonight. I would like to thank Tommy for a rousing speech there. Nice talk. Tommy, I have a little resentment towards Tommy. For a period of time in Visalia, I was somewhat involved in the arts, and I did some playing in the symphony and stuff, and I never got my name in that article that the social guy writes. And I look, and it's the end of the year, and they're recapping the year, and I see Tommy S. And it's like, okay. And then I see it again. It's like, Tommy gets two in one newspaper, and I don't get mentioned ever in my entire life. I'm just teasing. Tommy's the nicest Dodger fan I know. So there you go. My home group is the Monday night men's stag meeting. We meet at the PPAV Hall in Visalia on the corner of Main and Burke at 7:30 every Monday night, except the night of the Christmas parade. We go to a Mexican restaurant that night because it's too crazy with its floats and everything. So any men that are not familiar with that meeting, come out on Monday night. It's a wonderful meeting, and we'd love to see you there. When I first got sober, every day was a big deal for me. And when I started going to meetings in earnest, I noticed that they gave chips for one, and then three, and then six. Well, when I got to 2 months, I was ready for a pat on the back. And nobody had a two-month chip. So, I mean, I always share this because it shows that I'm kind of weird, and I found a place that had two and four and five. And so I rewarded myself. And you know, I know that's weird, and you're supposed to get it from someone else and get a hug and everything, but I hadn't had 2 months in, like, I don't know, 20 years. So I wanted, that's just to kind of let you know my thinking. So what I'd like to do now is just tell you a little bit about what happened and what it was like and what happened and what it's like now. My home life, I grew up around here. We had a country, kind of a ranch place with acreage. My father left when my sister and I were very, very young. And I think probably because he just was more interested in having more than one lady friend, you know, and so he just wasn't ready to settle down. My mother remarried, and we lived in a in a, like I said, a ranch place, and we were very, very well provided for. I do want to say one more thing about my father. I continue to have a relationship with him, even though my sister and I were adopted. So it's kind of an unusual thing. A lot of times, kids that are adopted don't know their birth parents, but I developed a great relationship with my birth father until he passed away in May of last year. So my mother remarried, and she remarried a hard drinking college professor who didn't really like or understand kids. We had all kinds of things we didn't want for anything. We had acreage, we had an Arabian horse, a donkey, chickens, a pond out in the back with a couple sailboats and catfish and bass, and it was just a wonderful place to grow up. But there was also a lot of rum and whatever they used to make martinis and stuff like that. And there was also a refrigerator in the garage that had a keg of beer that was always ready to go. And so I learned at a very young age that entertaining and alcohol were kind of the way you did it. I mean, I really can't remember ever an event in my home growing up that didn't involve alcohol, whether it was a bridge party or just a social thing or people coming over to just hang out. There was always drinking. And so I just equated alcohol to fun, I guess, at a very, very young age. In my early years, I was a little involved in athletics, but I got involved in music, and I really, really enjoyed performing for people. I caught on quite quickly, and I became known as a decent musician at a very young age. At around 13, a cousin of mine got married and had a reception. And this was, he married an Italian gal, and so the reception had the white wine and the red wine, and so, you know, no one cared, and so we mixed the white and the red, and I'm 13, 14, something like that, and I always like to say that my drinking career started off with incomprehensible demoralization because I had to dig my retainer out of the vomit from behind the Veterans Memorial Building there, you know, and so yeah, that happens. But I was very, very shy, and I couldn't talk to girls. In fact, I was so shy and so afraid to talk to girls. There was this one girl, and I kind of noticed her because she was about the only one that was my height. And I thought, well, she's okay. And so I wanted to go somewhere with her, do something, and I was just absolutely mortified to call her on the phone. So I made a recording. And I made a recording and spoke into the little cassette player back in the 70s or 60s or whatever it was. And I called her up and then shoved the cassette player into the phone. And I listened and I said, well, would you go to this dance or something with me? And the recording ended, and so I pick up the phone, and she says, what? Oh, my God, I have to speak. Yeah, that didn't turn out well. So anyway, that's the kind of shyness that I had at a young age. But I remembered back to the feeling of confidence that wine had given me. And even though it ended bad that night, I remembered the feeling that this, whatever was inside of me, broke free that night, you know. And I became talkative and I became friendly and it made me someone that I always wanted to be, but I didn't know how. And so I didn't become a drinker on that day, but I never forgot the I guess freedom that alcohol seemed to give me in that day at that reception. In high school, I continued. I did well in school. I always did well in school. In eighth grade, I was the American Legion Award winner. I was kind of an all-American seeming kid, but I did well in school, and then I kind of about the end of my middle of my sophomore year summer, kind of developed a reputation as kind of a partying guy. I never really planned on that, but that's just what happened. I never really had a lot of consequences from drinking. When I was about 17, there was always the store, you know, out in the country, there was always the store you could go to. When I was 17, I went and got my six-pack of Coors. You know, I looked about 12 and opened one up, got in the car, my mom's car, of course, and headed into town to go see a friend. And I got pulled over, and the policeman said, "Pour out the one you have and do the rest of your drinking inside." Now, that doesn't happen now. You'll learn later that I know from experience that it doesn't happen now. But, you know, I was beginning to learn that, okay, it's fun and it gives me freedom. And even when you get caught, there's really no consequences. At least I hadn't had any serious ones yet. It seemed like we were involved with the police a lot. I don't know. Didn't seem like bad kids to us, you know. But we got pulled over a lot, there was this one night where I spent a lot of time preparing a bunch of other issues, and they were in this plastic bag thing, so we get, my friend says, "Oh, we're getting pulled over," and so I do the smart thing. I put them in the glove box, you know, he asked for the registration, of course, it's his job, they roll out, he goes, "Whoa, what's there?" And so we step out of the car, and he grabs and he says, "I'm keeping these for evidence, but I'm not putting them on the ticket." I wonder what that guy is. I think it was Chevy Chase in a movie with Goldie Hawn. He said, "You know, cops have the best stuff." So anyway, growing up, alcohol was fun. It gave me confidence, and again, I was really not given a lot of negative anything, and I saw alcohol as the way for me to become the person that I wanted to be, I guess, is the way I want to put that. I want to talk a little bit about relationships. I'm not very good at them. I hurt a lot of very, very fine young ladies when I was growing up, and I think when I look back now that I really didn't care about their feelings, and I didn't see how my ego-driven actions could affect them in a negative way. And again, I just don't think I really cared about other people a lot. I didn't know how to love or be loved. And this didn't change for a long, long time. It's said that when we start drinking alcoholically, that we don't mature emotionally. That means when I stopped at age 42, I was still an emotional teenager. I believe this to be true. My first marriage ended in divorce, and I was married again in less than 6 months. I don't know why. Maybe I needed someone to be around me. Maybe I didn't like me. Or I just didn't want to be alone with me. When I look back now, I can see that I needed someone there always. What's the saying? Your mind is a dangerous place. Don't go there alone. That's very, very true for me. My second marriage has been going for nearly 28 years, and I'm blessed with a woman who has tolerated me at my worst, whether it was for the kids, love, or some other reason. And I'm grateful for her love, patience, tolerance, understanding, and support. And I'm thankful that Kelly is here tonight. I've learned to love here in AA. Remember, we're dealing with a mental teenager. The relationships with my wife, children, extended family, co-workers, and friends have been reasonably restored due to my higher power, the steps, and the simple suggestions that fellow AA members have given me. This has only happened because I choose to say I live the steps. I prefer to live the steps because work sounds hard. And don't get me wrong, working some of those steps took a lot of effort, but what a relief. It's amazing to me that this seemingly helpless state of mind and body can change through a series of magical events. Becoming willing, attempting honesty, being open-minded to the suggestions, finding a higher power, and the big one for me was identification. In 1992, I started a memorial golf tournament for scholarships for two friends of mine that passed away in a car accident. Ironically, I was supposed to be with them, but the Floyd County Symphony had a rehearsal that evening, and I was unable to go to dinner. After the golf tournament, the guys went to another home, and I was arrested two blocks from my house with a 0.24 blood alcohol content. I was 32 years old. I'd been a daily drinker for many, many years. And I figured out to myself that I deserved the, what's Paul the psychologist call them, mini vacations, daily vacations that I was taking were something that I deserved because I worked hard, my groups were very successful. I had become a public school educator at a very young age of 22, and by 32 I had a master's degree and I was entitled to do what I did. Like I heard a great speaker, I think it was from Argentina, say, "Don't they know who I think I am?" I figured this mistake was just a little blip on my historical radar screen, and I couldn't accept the truth about me because I never tried to deal with me. I just covered up those feelings every day, day after day, month after month, year after year. I was sent to the road camp, and I still thought that it wasn't my fault. One day, they said, "We're going on a road trip." And so they threw these vests on us, put us in a van, and the van stopped at the county superintendent of schools building. They gave me a hoe. Luckily, I had a hat on. I pulled it down as low as it could go, and I kept my head down. And I hoed the weeds for the superintendent of schools, who was a neighbor of mine and had allowed me to get married in his backyard. Was I demoralized? Not yet. I went to school and told my principal, and there was no punishment at school. So I figured, just like I'd learned when I was a kid, you know, if you're doing it and there's no real consequences, then why stop? I went to alternative services and I had a wonderful counselor there. She was very, very nice to me, and I was as dishonest with her as I could possibly be. I simply could not identify as an alcoholic. I was just too young. I mean, I couldn't actually have a problem with drinking. I could not face the fact that my friends and family would continue to have, as I saw it, fun the rest of my life, and I would be sitting there on the outside looking in. I could not identify with that. I went to the shortest meetings I could find because I had a card now. And one of those meetings was the noon meeting at the Alano Club. Now, I went to the noon meeting at the Alano Club because I could remain anonymous and I could look around the room and see all of the reasons that I didn't belong in AA. Okay? And this is, again, don't they know who I think I am, right? And so I'm looking at people and judging them in my mind that I, no, not like. And so I convinced myself that AA wasn't for me because I really didn't want to hear the message. But there was one person that made me listen, and his name is Curtis Jones. Now, when Curtis spoke, he commanded the floor. And he said a few things that I remember, like, it took you 25 years to get here, and you want to get fixed in one day. And I thought to myself, that's exactly what I want. How did he know that? I didn't hear the part about that's not the way it works. So my first bout in AA in 1992, needless to say, was unsuccessful. I just didn't think what was being said in AA applied to me. I would occasionally relate to a funny story, but that would only be if it was humorous to me, and I just didn't think that the AA program was for me. In a few days, I was back to my old pattern of drinking, driving, and neglecting my family. This continued for 8 years until New Year's Eve at the Millennium, the 2000. And I was in a band at the Bellagio Casino in Las Vegas on the Strip. Everything was free, the lobster, the steak, all of the drinks, and I took advantage. We played some dance music, and then the Harry Connick Jr. Band came on and brought everyone into New Year's, and then we started again and played dance music for another, I don't know, 2 or 3 hours. My sister, who is an AA member as well, called me before the gig started and said, "We're coming." And I said, "Trece, you can't get in. They got bomb sniffing dogs. There's 2 security checkpoints." And she said, "Oh yeah, we're coming." And so I looked out on the dance floor about 12:15, and there's my sister out there dancing. Like, we find a way, don't we? I guess so. That was kind of a, like, if an alcoholic wants to get somewhere, they're going to get there, I guess, no matter what. But anyway, the next day, they piled us in a van and took us to the airport. The next thing I remember was waking up at the Burger King in Newhall, California. I don't know how long I had slept. I don't know. I don't remember getting there. And for the first time in my life, I looked at myself and I said, I can't go on like this. I can't keep doing this. Something has to change. So I got home and I decided my new plan. I'd been exposed to AA 8 years earlier, but did I go to AA? No. I'm intelligent. I'm going to beat this thing on my own. So I bought a 12-pack, put it in the garage refrigerator, and said, I'm not going to drink it. I'm going to show that I don't need to drink. So the next day, I went to work, passed the refrigerator, patted myself on the back on the way, got home from work, gave myself a he's a jolly good fellow to myself, and passed it again. And I did this for 23 days. I was expecting a commendation from the mayor. It never came. And I realized that maybe I'd overestimated this alcohol thing. You know, it's just not as bad as I thought. And about that time, a friend came by, and he brought his guitar, and he was showing me these blues chords, these 7 chords on the guitar, and he brought a 6-pack of beer, and well, I'd done 23 days. He came to my house. How could I say no? And so I had that one beer, and that one beer propelled me to the state of incomprehensible demoralization 2.5 years later. I didn't want to be drinking, and I found myself unable to stop. That's a horrible place to be, and many of us have been there. About that time, a lady in my school district got a horrible disease. It hit very quickly, and she passed away while she was still teaching. The union came to us and said, we are offering catastrophic illness insurance. If you'd like it, it's available for a month or a few weeks. And I thought, this is great. I'm going to keep drinking. When I need a new liver, I'll cash in that insurance policy and everything will be great. Now, can we admit that that's insane? So I can't stop, and I've accepted the fact that that's just the way it's going to be. I continued on this crazy path of self-destruction, and I was not a part of anything going on in my home. My wife held everything together, did everything for the home, paid all the bills, helped the kids with the homework, got them to the games, and I was like a passive observer in my own home. The path I was on, I figured it, I just had to accept it because I had accepted the fact that I couldn't change it. The funny thing is, I could change it, but if I would only use the suggestions that I heard years ago in AA, but I chose not to, I had lost hope that I could ever live my life without alcohol. My second arrest was in 2002. This was a little more involved. My two sons were taken from me, and their two friends were taken. My wife had to drive to Hume Lake to pick them up, and I was taken to the Fresno County Jail with a 0.21 blood alcohol content. That particular day, I felt like talking. The park law enforcement officer was through talking with me, and she drove away. She was in a truck, and it didn't look like a police car. It did say law enforcement on the side, but I wasn't done. I flagged her down again and had a few more things to say, and then that's when I ended up in the back of her car. When my attorney saw that, he said, dude, you got off and you went back. Why didn't you go fishing? But you know what? I wasn't through talking to her, and I think that was God talking to me. I think God was saying, you have played the alcohol game and lost. And it's time for you to end this thing. And it was in the back of that car that on the way down to the Fresno County Jail that I had what we call a psychic change or a moment of clarity. And I had prayed. When you're growing up, We went to Sunday school a little. We didn't go to really church a lot, but I was baptized, and my mother taught us to pray, and you know, you pray to God, and as I grew older and went to school and had liberal professors, and you know, God wasn't really at the forefront. And then when I started drinking, it was God help me find my keys, help me find my car, you know, simple things like that. And it wasn't really sincere. Well, as I was heading down to Fresno, for the first time, I prayed from the depths of my soul, God help me with this. If you were there, take this from me, because I cannot do this by myself. And I believe he did. When I got to the jail, they gave me one phone call. And I called a friend, and he lives in Prather, which is about halfway to Shaver Lake. When I called him, he was in bed with his wife. And they weren't holding hands. He didn't tell me that day. He told me that later. But that guy got dressed and came down to the Fresno County Jail and took me back to Hume Lake. And I will always appreciate that and remember that. And that night, in that little trailer at Hume Lake, with my kids gone and trouble at home waiting, I got up and went to the fridge at 2:30 in the morning and pulled out a natural ice, Now, why did I drink natural ice? It tasted horrible. But it's not very expensive, and the alcohol content kicks ass, right? So I had a natty ice at 2:30 in the morning on July 15, 2002, and that's where my journey to AA started in earnest. I met my pastor, and we talked. I told him about my problems and that I needed alcohol to sleep. But he's a wise guy. He said, "Really, when do you start?" I couldn't answer that. He told me to get all the booze out of my house. And so something, when I look back now, I met with my sponsor this week, and we laughed about this, and he said, "Isn't it great that you can laugh about this?" Because something tells me at this point in my life, I wasn't quite ready to be all in, because I boxed up all the booze in my house and took it to storage. You know, you'd never know. It was Glenfiddich and Crown Royal and Glenlovet. I will say this, it's not still there, okay? About two years later, we're getting the Christmas tree or something, and it was raining, and I thought, well, this would be a good time to dump it. We dumped it all out down the drains at the storage place. So anyway, it's not still there. So I don't still have a back door and a supply or something. Anyway. So, my pastor also suggested a couple of meetings. One was at our church, which is Christ Lutheran, on Friday nights, and I still go to that when I can. And another one was in the blue room downstairs at Cui Delta Hospital, the Sunday evening Serenity Seekers. I went to that meeting with my card, because I was on the long-term plan at Alternative Services this time. I was on the, you know, 9 month or whatever plan. And I went to that meeting, and I got called on at that first meeting, because I really don't count my 92 AA because I wasn't in, but now I was really trying to be in. And I got called on that first meeting, and I heard myself say, "My name's Jim, and I'm an alcoholic." Now, for me to hear that coming from me was a big deal, because I could never admit that before. I could never admit that I had the disease of alcoholism. And when the words came out, I was okay with it. There were two guys that came up to me at that meeting. The first one was named Chuck. He gave me a card, had the familiar circle with a triangle in it. And the other one, he's an angel in heaven now. His name was Kelly Dock. And Kelly gave me a card, and on the back of it he wrote, "Call anytime." And I was completely blown away that this place could offer me that kind of love and support from two people I had just met. And that was here. And I didn't discover that my first go round in AA. And it made me want to come back. I highly recommend to anyone in this room, when you see a newcomer, to approach them with a smile, to shake their hand, and to welcome them. Your attitude might make the difference in them coming back to another AA meeting. Your happiness, your showing that the program is working in your life may be the difference in them coming back or going back to drinking again. And I can speak from experience that I went back to the Blue Room because those guys reached out to me. I continued to get my card signed at meetings, but I really was introduced to the program by a former postmaster from Farmersville, California, named Don W. Now, Don was my new counselor, and Don gave me exactly what I needed. He gave me old school AA. And he would look at me across that table and ask me a question like, "Why do you drink?" And I couldn't lie. I mean, those steely eyes, man, it was like they demanded the truth. And so I told them the truth. I drink for effect. You know, I don't care what it tastes like. I drink for effect. And I began to get honest with myself because he demanded it. And it's exactly what I needed. I saw in him how the program worked, and I thought it could work for me because he showed me that the program was successful. And I did everything as close as I could to exactly the way he asked me to do it. I took a position as the literature dude on the Sunday night meeting. I later became secretary and served in the central office for many years as a CSR and a vice president. I continued to observe and follow the habits of people I wanted to be like who had more time than I, and I started doing the things that they said they were doing. Pray in the morning, read reflection books, slow down and try to meditate. This all helped. My first real identification with somebody that I didn't see in meetings locally was at the Ritchie Barn Dance in April of the following year when Cliff Roach from Oceanside, California came. Now, Cliff was a high school educator and I identified with just about everything that he had to say. When I listened to his pitch, the program became real and meaningful to me, and I gained hope that I could make it. I started reading all sorts of books, literature, and listening to people like Clancy Imeslin and Dr. Paul Olinger, who wrote the chapter on acceptance, and other powerful AA speakers. I knew then that I belonged here. In my early days of sobriety, I was so proud of me and what I was doing, and I thought others would be too. I forgot that I walked all over people to get where I wanted to get, and just because I stopped drinking, I expected them to build a statue of me in my front yard. That's not the way it works. I began to mature from a teenage mind to a helpful, caring adult. It didn't happen overnight. The 12 steps made me look at me and the hurricane of destruction that I left in my wake. Family, friends, coworkers, children, relatives, no one was spared. Steps 4 through 9 forced me to look at my part in all of this and forced me to own it and deal with it. I hated it when I came to meetings when I first got sober and people would say, look at yourself. And that's what I needed to do. Look at myself. What's my part in the problem? Things like that. I would hear it all the time. And it was annoying, but I hadn't even started step one. I didn't really know anything about how this thing really worked. We have the tools here to repair our lives, and for me it was the working of the 12 steps with a firm, caring sponsor that helped me face the damage I caused at home. I remember Bob from Lemoore in the Sunday night meeting, who said he could never repay his wife for the grief and heartbreak that he had caused her. That same thing that he said applies to me as well. My source for solutions now is a loving God, friends in AA, a caring sponsor, and the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. After being guided through the 12 steps in order, I am able to live them and not work them. I try to think of you first now. This is new for me. AA has allowed me to try to become the person I always wanted to be, but didn't know how, without booze. When I got sober in 2002, I was a public school educator, and I had two DUIs on my record, 1992 and 2002. They could have let me go at any time, but they didn't. My home life was being held on by a thread, and I was in danger of losing everything there. I had no license, and I rode the bus 35 miles each way to work. That bus that I took at that time is no longer running, and so I consider myself very, very fortunate. It didn't matter if it was raining, dark, fog. At 4:20, I got on that bike and rode to the bus station. I found that to be very, very therapeutic, because that was really the first time that I started looking at myself. And for 6 months, I did that. And it really, really helped me. Since that has happened, I kept my job. My wife didn't leave. My kids say that they love me. And I get to hold my 4 beautiful grandchildren. I don't say this to boast, but this is what is a capsule of what has happened to me since I became sober in 2002. I played trumpet solos twice at Carnegie Hall in New York City. I conducted at Lincoln Center in New York City. 10 years after my last arrest in 2012, I was named the Tulare County Educator of the Year. I was in danger of losing my job, my family, and everything important to me. And those things happened to me here. If I'm drinking, those things don't happen. I lose that job and family, and I end up in a hospital, institution, or dead. I've been taken from the brink of disaster and transformed into a person who can look you in the eye and listen when you speak. 2 things are important about that. Number one, I never wanted to look you in the eye because there was always booze on my breath. And number two, I really didn't listen when people talked to me. I only wanted them to hear what I had to say. You know, and it was always a one-sided thing. And I try to listen now. I grew up in AA. I thank God that I had the mind of a teenager when I got here, because I've been shaped and molded into the person I am now, and that is a miracle. We have something here in AA. Oh, I better wrap it up. We have something here in AA in Tulare County, and it's called the Birthday Club. And all you have to do to be a member of the Birthday Club is go see Bob in Exeter and give $1 for every year of sobriety that you have. If everyone in Tulare County did that, the problems at the central office would disappear. And one last thing on sponsorship. A sponsee of mine saw me at a gathering, and someone told him that I wasn't drinking, and he said, "No way, Jimmy's a drunk." A few years later, I saw him at a party, and I had my 2-liter of club soda with me. And I told him that I had 10 years, and he couldn't believe it. But because I set an example of a new life in AA to him, he wanted what I had. And now he has years adding up as we trudge this happy road of destiny together. I hope that's how it works for you and everyone else in this room as well. Thank you for allowing me to speak. God bless you.